dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. One of the determinants of the future trajectory of that war is the readiness and warfighting ability of the United States military. Today, two female Army officers were inducted into the Rangers, an elite and storied Special Forces unit, having survived its rigorous training program. Their accomplishment is being used to argue that the long-standing ban on women serving in ground combat positions should be ended. To talk about the motivations behind and the advisability of this latest example of social engineering of the U.S. military is a woman who is deeply knowledgeable about and a stalwart defender of the culture of the military. That's a poorly understood but critical ingredient in our armed forces readiness, morale, and combat capability. She is Elaine Donnelly, the founder and president of the Center for Military Readiness, an indispensable organization. She is also a former member of the Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Services and the Presidential Commission on the Assignment of Women in the Armed Forces. Elaine Donnelly, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us, but most especially on this occasion.
Always nice to talk to you, Frank. Thank you.
So, Captain Kristen Greist and First Lieutenant Shay Haver, two U.S. Military Academy graduates, have achieved this distinction with their induction into the Rangers today. Give us a flavor, Elaine, of how this impacts the question with which you have long been involved, namely whether women are in fact able to perform in frontline combat positions.
Well, the women deserve congratulations for earning the respect of their colleagues. They made it through. It's an amazing accomplishment. However, I think we need to look at the big picture here, because the Army officials, I think, are going overboard and drawing conclusions, and not just the Army, the Navy saying, well, now it's time for women in Navy SEALs. But let's look at some information that is just now coming to light, and it is relevant to the discussion. We filed some Freedom of Information Act requests starting last February, and we finally received from the Army some disturbing data about injuries to women who were in the preliminary tests, what were called exception to policy tests, in units like field artillery, Bradley vehicle maintenance, and the like. Now, General Odierno claimed that everything had gone well. Well, it turns out when you look at the injury rates, that, and you have to dig deep into the medical command reports and the public health reports, you see that on average, the injury rates for women were double those of men. Now, we're talking over 400-some women. What about them? What about the long-term implications of not just allowing but ordering women into units such as the infantry and armored special operations forces against common sense? Because if you know your injury rates are going to be that high, then there is some callous disregard for reality for officials to say, well, now this is what we're going to do. This will be official policy. Women will be ordered on the same basis as men in units such as the infantry, and they're calling this a good thing for women. Well, I would differ with that.
Elaine Donnelly, you have been concerned, as I think a lot of people who admire and want to preserve the United States military, that the solution to the challenge that you just described will be to lower the standards for women. They'll have to carry less weight. They'll have to be capable of performing less rigorous physical tasks. Is that happening in this instance with these two Ranger women, as far as we can tell? Or are you simply concerned that going forward, it would inevitably have to happen to prevent the kinds of injuries you're talking about?
Well, I'm willing to accept what the Army is saying right now. There have been rumors to the contrary. But as I say, I congratulate the women on their accomplishment. But we have a collision course in progress here, because the Department of Defense, the Army, they have proclaimed the goal of achieving gender diversity metrics. That means quotas. In order to achieve a critical mass, that was the word used by General Martin Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, you have to make adjustments in standards. You validate, that's the word they're using, validate standards that will end up equal but lower than before. It's the only way to prevent these horrendous injury rates. And I should add, field artillery, Bradley maintenance units, even military police, one of the two Ranger women is a military police woman. When you have 103 injury rates among other women who came from the same field, then you have to realize, wait a minute, we're talking about units even tougher than the ones that have been tested already. According to a British report, even what they call the physical elite, these two women certainly would qualify as the physical elite, even they are subject to injury rates double those of men, as we're seeing in the recent reports, and also fatigue when it sets in and you have to fight the enemy at the end of a long march. Even the effectiveness with a rifle can be affected, and that's the British report saying that. So we need to look at this in perspective. The case for women in combat still has not been made.
Let me ask you about one other aspect of this, Elaine, and it goes really to the point you just made, that the case for women in combat seems to require a kind of callous disregard for certain realities, quite apart from the physical strains, the lack of privacy in these frontline units and what that can do to unit cohesion and perhaps the safety of women in some cases. The sexual tensions that are inevitable in putting women into all-male units. The implications for family life of having those tensions operate with these units. Give us very quickly, if you would, a sense of whether those are somehow being ignored or is the law of gravity being suspended.
Well, let's look again at the big picture here. There are a few aggressive women for whom none of these things matter. At least that's what they say. But you don't make it policy in the military based on the exception. You have to look at the overall picture. According to the Department of Defense recruitment figures, the change in policy doubled the number of women who said they would be reluctant, they would not join the military. We also know that if women are misassigned to an MOS beyond their capability, it costs over $30,000 to reassign someone else. And the recruiting costs are not even part of that. This is a cost on a military that's already stressed with budget cuts and other problems. Now, on the issue of sexual misconduct, we know that it exists. We know that all efforts to stem the tide have failed. The numbers keep going up. The only question is, should we extend those problems into the combat arms? If we do, and we have absences due to misconduct or accusations of misconduct, pregnancies, and the like, if you're looking at small teams, 4 to 12 members, when, say, M1 tank crews, infantry rifle squads, and the like, you start taking out personnel who are key to the unit, the cohesion and the effectiveness of that unit, then you're making life not only more difficult but more dangerous. All of these factors, including privacy, if women say, we don't want anything to do with this, it's going to hurt the overall ability of the Army to recruit women, to retain them. These kinds of issues are not even being considered.
Yeah, this is really the concern. Let me just ask in closing, and we only got a minute left, Elaine Donnelly of the Center for Military Readiness. The issue should be combat performance and the readiness of our forces. Is there any evidence on the basis of the extensive research you have done that these kinds of steps, or for that matter, bringing in homosexuals or transgender individuals, is actually enhancing the readiness of our military?
There has never been any evidence that any of these changes have been made or proposed to improve the military, its combat effectiveness. It's always about, again, diversity. the claim that diversity, what Admiral Mullen called diversity as a strategic imperative, this is a new cultural value being imposed on our military. The consequences will be very severe.
We will be living with them, I'm afraid, for some time to come. Elaine Donnelly, I cannot thank you enough for what you do at the Center for Military Readiness and the courage that you have exhibited over so many years in speaking truth to power about these very thorny issues. Keep it up. Come back to us again very soon. John Sitalides will join us. We'll talk about the fall of the Greek government and what's happening in Turkey, what it means for Europe, and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.